Hello, I'm Matt Chudley, and this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. Coming up on today's episode, it's a Wednesday, so it must be PMQs unpacked. Patrick McGuire joins me this week to pause the action from the House of Commons to analyse the key exchanges between Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer in real time. Lara Spitt rounds up the best of the rest. Before that, in The Economist, Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton on, is this what it looks like when the rebels stop plotting against Rishi Sunak? Because it still looks quite plotty. And if you like what you hear on the podcast, don't forget you can join me for Politics Out the Boring Bits live on Times Radio, on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. It's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10. Now, remember this?
We need a popular conservative movement.
Yeah, well, last night Liz Truss took part in an online pop conversation to talk about how popular it all is. According to Politico this morning, Mark Littlewood was hosting it, boasted at one point more than 200 people had joined over the course of the hour. I mean, that really is a
popular conservative movement.
Although I know how Liz feels, not feeling very popular this morning, not winning at the Emmys last night, the Radio Oscars. I mean, obviously we don't do it for the baubles. We don't do it for the baubles. We're lucky because we haven't got any baubles.
The Columnists with Ali Burt, Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton.
And they're both here in blue. Are you actually doing this on purpose now?
No, that was no.
It's just by accident.
We're just going in sync with each other.
Very colour coordinated.
No, we weren't conferring while you were out losing your award. We weren't on.
Don't keep going on about.
We feel we should have been put out for one, and then we might have won.
You'd have probably won.
Yeah, we might. We'd have been wearing matching outfits as well, and we got a prize.
Couldn't have done worse than that.
They even do gold, silver, and bronze. Did you even get bronze?
Yeah.
No.
Did you not get a badge or anything?
Oh, sorry. The Times Radio did. We
got silver. Yeah, got on the podium.
Silver for news coverage.
Excellent.
So that's good. Anyway, let's not.
Okay. Good to see you being very gracious about it. Anyway,
no, we don't do it for the baubles, do we?
No, of course not.
We don't do it for the baubles. For the love of it.
Meaningless, apart from when you win.
Yeah.
Is your cabinet now empty at home?
Because I won something for the book. I won a prize for the books. That was good. So that's something, isn't it? Yeah. I'm an award-winning author now.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. Cool.
Right, very good. Let's move on. So we were told that the plot was over and they were going to leave Rishi Sunak alone, the plotters, after the weekend, despite him doing quite badly in the local elections. They thought it was not quite badly enough. But you've got Robert Jenrick out and about attacking the state of Britain's borders. You had Suella Braverman on the radio and the telly at the weekend. You've got Liz Truss laying out her own things on her online chat forums, whatever. Is this what not plotting looks like, Alice? Because it still looks quite a lot like plotting.
Very like plotting. And a lot of mixed metaphors, don't you think? I mean, even Michael Gove had a lot. We had Kate Moss and, you know, nothing tastes as good as skinny fields, which I thought was a bit of a stretch for the Tory party.
I couldn't quite understand what point he was making.
Yeah. And then he went on and did a whole nother metaphor, didn't he? Which was kind of like...
About the orchestra.
Orchestras. Oh, and I thought none of you really know what you're saying anymore. That we just need to get a clear message now, don't we? Like...
Yeah, if it's a plot, it's not a very good one, is it?
So Michael Gove was saying he warned right-wing Tories against comfort eating.
Yes.
By pursuing hardline policies that make us feel good about ourselves. So don't fill yourself up on right-wingery. Yeah. And it says, as Kate Moss once said, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels.
But what is the analogy there? What's the metaphor? Because what's skinny then?
Centrist to the...
So I think he thinks rubbish food is basically the right wing, isn't it? So it's basically rubbish policies that you're putting
yourself
up on.
Yeah, but that's the comfort eating. I get that. But then that isn't what Kate Moss was talking about.
No.
She wasn't talking about comfort eating. Her phrase was, which she's now distanced herself from, to be fair to her, because it seemed to be encouraging eating disorders, it's good to be skinny. Mm.
Which but don't you think Gove's just on a diet? I mean, that's the thing. He just can't think about anything apart from food at the moment.
Well, no, because he can think about orchestras.
He's obviously.
So then he went on to say the Tories risk drowning out the wonderful orchestra of their broad policy platform by focusing on right-wing measures. He was saying that just as the orchestra comes together, we need to make sure voters hear different parts of our message.
Right. And so what's the right-wing like? The trombones or something?
No, but they're drowning out. No. The orchestra is the broad platform of social justice.
But for the metaphor to work, you'd have to have a certain part of the orchestra that was drowning out the rest. That's why I went with trombones, because they're loud.
No, I think they're drowning out the whole orchestra.
Right.
They're just making a lot of noise.
Or maybe percussion. I think it's percussion. I think they're doing...
Oh, two big cymbals.
Yeah.
Cymbals clashing.
Symbolism? Political symbol?
Oh, yeah. Bassoons or something. I'm just trying to think of the noise, noisy ones. Tubas.
Tubas.
They're huge.
But it is ridiculous when they have to go for this because they can't actually spell out what they want to say, which is that we think the Tory party's over and we're all battling over who's going to be the next one to become quite
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Instructive, because Michael Gove is one of the most articulate people I've ever met. He speaks in fantastically long but grammatically correct subclausal sentences like Charles Dickens, and yet he's not making any sense at all. So if Michael's if Michael's lost his fluency, they're really in trouble.
He does have a habit of this at Cabinet. I remember I got a story on the front page of the Times this where he was accused of
auditioning. Did you win an award for it?
There's no need to be like that, isn't there?
Go on, sorry.
This is in 2017. He was seen to be auditioning for the job of Chancellor, using, as it was told to me, lots of long economic-y words.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Not as bad as Ed Balls, though, was he? Do you remember Ed Balls' words? Didn't he have that ergonomic?
Endogenous.
Yeah, endogenous growth theory.
Can't say it. Endogenous and exogenous growth theory.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So he clearly knows. If he quotes Kate Moss in the Cabinet, he knows someone will tell Steve Swinford.
Yes.
But I'm not sure what the message... I don't know what the message is.
No, I think it's a very vivid phrase from Kate Moss.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was original from her. Maybe you know...
No, it's a fridge magnet.
Oh, okay.
I think she had it on her fridge and the interview saw it and then she said, oh, that's her flatmates and her had put it on. I mean, it might be very innocuous, but it has... Yeah. Like, I won't get out of bed for 10,000 quid. It's the two phrases you know about models, don't you?
Yeah. So anyway, Michael's levered that into his lecture to the Cabinet and then got himself into the Times as a result. But he's right, of course. I don't think you don't win. You win elections from the centre, don't you? As I'm sure your esteemed panel on how to win an election is telling you, on a regular basis.
But also just by being united. It's like the single worst thing for the Tories, the fact they're constantly arguing amongst themselves. If you were inclined to listen to them, you wouldn't know where they stood on anything.
Yeah. So it's not really a plot, is it? Because a plot takes place in secret, whereas this is all taking place in the open. It's just people going on the radio and going on the telly and saying, hang on, this is what I think we should be more right-wing.
Yeah. And also they had the plot, and then the plot didn't work because they didn't do quite badly enough. So that Rishi Sunak's had another chance, hasn't he, over the summer? I mean, he may regret that in the end. He may think, God, I wish I got out now.
It is funny, though, that the only people who seem to be worse at politics than Rishi Sunak are the people plotting to remove Rishi Sunak.
Yes.
For months they've been saying, oh, it's going to be the budget, oh, it's going to be the reshuffle, oh, it's going to be party conference, oh, it's going to be the local elections. That's the moment.
To be fair, Jenrick might have a point about the Home Office.
I think he does. I think that's a really good idea.
I think the Home Office is a bit sort of dysfunctional, isn't it, from everything I hear about it? As opposed to the rest of the civil services,
they should always have split off immigration, and they'd have the same problem with prisons. When prisons was a massive issue, they then tried to split that you can't have everything in one department. And Theresa May was the last person who managed to actually effectively cope with it, but she was all over it, and you know that took her 6 or 7 years to get on top of it. I don't think even then she managed it. So I think it's much better if we just split the two in half.
But the key hole in his argument that, you know, he thinks he should break up the Home Office and be tough and all of that, is far more people come to the UK legally than illegally. Mm-hmm. Everyone's talking about the small boats, but the pressures on public services or whatever it might be is people coming here legally, under rules set by the government.
Over half a million people are coming as students, aren't they? So you've got that.
And so it's not a problem with the Home Office. It's a problem that the government wants those people, you know, from his perspective, it's a problem that the government wants those people, and in part they want them to come, it helps slightly bump up GDP.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem between the two sort of historic wings of the Conservative Party. Between people, I mean, the City of London wants immigration.
Yeah.
The free market wants immigration, and we need it. But then you've got a kind of more protectionist, Little England, if you like, Brexity Tory party, which is fairly prevalent at the moment, which says it doesn't want it. But then who's going to staff the NHS? Who's going to run the care homes? Who's going to serve you in Starbucks?
Well, actually, I mean, the problem is the benefit system. So, I mean, that we've got all that as well. So you can never really talk about immigration without talking about benefit system, working out why we haven't got more British people actually going to work and wanting to work, and whether it's a mental health crisis or...
Well, and it's a housing crisis as well, because the people who where the jobs are... I mean, there's vacancies in London and the South East, but people can't afford to move from the North, from Sunderland and Hull or wherever, because they can't afford to live here.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that they're lazy. It's just there's not that much work where they are. Labour is not mobile because of the housing.
Yeah. And actually, one of the reasons why we can't build more houses is because there aren't enough people to do them because, you know...
Because we
haven't got enough immigration. And so it goes on. Anyway, best of luck with all that, Robert Jeremy McCann, which you soon have. Let's talk about your column today, Alice. You've written about stalking and particularly your own experience of this.
So it wasn't actually my experience. It was my husband's. So because of Baby Reindeer, I then remembered that... We spent 15 years when he had a stalker from the age of 21 to about 40, actually. And it was really disarming. It started off, the woman had been at school with him, and then she bumped into him on the street 3 years later. She was quite disturbed, and she would follow him. We'd get up to 10, 15 letters and postcards a day, and she would send, when we got married, we were really nervous she was going to turn up at the wedding. And then she would send all sorts of baby presents. And then she'd started sending presents about the baby's dying. And it became really, really tricky. And my husband found that every time he went to a new job, he had to explain that this woman might turn up. And she did regularly turn up. I mean, she once turned up at our flat. And we had a sort of, you know, communal area in the front. And she just wrote in lipstick all over it, Veni, Vidi, Vici. And everyone else would complain to us. And there was nothing we could do about it. And in many ways, I felt incredibly sorry for her. But then the problem was watching Baby Reindeer, it did all come back. Just it was almost a joke for our friends. They thought it was quite funny because, you know, it's a man being stalked by this woman, as if, you know, it wasn't dangerous and it didn't matter. But it did actually pervade our life for quite a long time.
And what about the police or trying to do something about it, as like to stop it?
We did actually. When she came to the flat and when she kept coming to his work, but they just thought it was incredibly funny. They kept saying, God, lucky you, you know. That fact, lucky you was the one we got most, or Bunny Boiler, you know, you should be so lucky. And it was definitely seen as something that was quite entertaining, quite funny, and also that he must have done something. And the problem about Baby Reindeer is actually he quite likes it, the comedian. He doesn't, you know, he quite wants that sort of affirmation from someone and that obsession, whereas my husband really did not want any of that, because both of us it was really intrusive.
And neither did you said it was a 20-80 split between men and women. I mean, the Baby Reindeer is slightly unusual because it's a man and because he welcomes it.
Because so normally it's the other way around. Yeah.
It's the other way around, and they most certainly do not welcome it. So don't tell me the ending, by the way, because I've seen 4 out of 7 so far. It's a brilliant show, but it's maybe not quite on message in terms of the way that stalking normally plays out, which is, you know, ex-boyfriend typically, I think, or colleague bothering to you, I mean, in its mildest way, often a lot more than bothering a young woman.
And also what I think really worried me is once I started looking at the stats for it, there used to be sort of 7,000 or 8,000 complaints a year about stalking. Now it's gone up to 200,000. I mean, and that is because of social media. So I think before, either people didn't really understand what was going on or it just wasn't as prevalent. I mean, I don't think it was. But then now people naturally stalk people anyway. They do on Instagram, you look up celebrities. And I think you're used to doing it on Facebook. So you know quite a lot about people's lives, more than you would have before. And, you know, when I talk to the MPs, they all have stalkers, particularly the female ones. They just, that's part of their life now, is they have these people stalking them.
In fact, it's come up a lot when we've been doing the exit interviews with MPs who are standing down. This is Tory MP Craig Whittaker, who was on the exit interview this week, talking about the menacing behaviour he'd had from the public.
I mean, we've had two already gone to court this year. This year. Last year I had a stalker. Now, that was frightening. It came about this woman apparently wanted to marry me. She'd written 70 journals all about me. She knew where my kids lived. She had the addresses of my children. But yeah, that was quite frightening. Not particularly for myself, but for my family. You know, whilst I'm down here in Westminster, my wife's at home by herself.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, I'm often on the phone and the doorbell will go and there'll be somebody wanting to speak to me. And it's quite late at night. And, you know, if people really thought about it honestly and openly, they probably wouldn't do it.
It's interesting. What should be done about it? If there are more and more reports of it, is it that the police need to take it more seriously?
So the police really don't take it very seriously still. It's almost like a domestic incident, not even abuse, or they're not worried about it. And yet two women a week are dying from domestic abuse, and most of them will cite stalking as part of that. Yeah. So 97%, there's been some sort of stalking issue involved. So it's a very, very dangerous solution just to think, well, actually, we'll brush it over. It doesn't really matter. It's not important. Mm. I think they've got to do a lot more. I think the MPs are trying to do more because they are so worried. Yeah. And I think we should take it more seriously, particularly, say, it's a female stalker that it is still seen as a bit of a joke sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, there's this sort of vitriol against MPs generally, which is slightly different, isn't it? It's people just being horrible about MPs, particularly female MPs. But then there's this the extra stalking element, which you see. But that can be that's more often than not people not in the public eye. It's just I think for the most part it's jealous ex-boyfriends whose self-esteem or whatever masculinity whatever has been impugned, as they see and rejected, and they take their revenge.
But I mean, one of the things with MPs, when we've put out videos from these interviews where people MPs have talked about the abuse or the stalking, or whatever, it's amazing actually. Even the people that will then publicly reply, obviously this is awful, but and they'll sort of then try to justify it in some way.
Mm. I think we've now got this really weird situation where we think it's quite normal that an MP would wear a flak jacket. The female MPs all told me that they wear trainers the whole time so they can run if they need to. That is strange. Yeah. And then they all have sort of quadruple locks at least on their doors. And I think that it's become normalised. I don't think we should allow that to happen. Yeah. I think this behaviour is wrong. And I do blame quite a lot of the social media. I think we shouldn't have allowed people to be as abusive as they are on social media.
We've conducted I think William Hague wrote about this very well a few weeks ago. We've conducted an appallingly irresponsible experiment, especially with young people, with social media and smartphone. The idea that we're just now coming around to the idea it might not be a good idea to have a 14-year-old with a smartphone in school.
Yeah.
Of course, think about that. Of course it's not.
Yeah.
We've got the online, the harms thing gone through, but it's been 20 years now. It's 25 years, and it's shown that there is a sort of, there's a kind of well of poison out there. Yeah, it's not necessarily many people, but it only needs to be 1% of the population.
But also it's the normalisation of it, isn't it?
Yes.
Other people seeing other people doing it.
Yes.
It is extraordinary when people say, obviously we don't, this is terrible, but you shouldn't have supported austerity, or you should have voted for this.
Worry I find is why they feel the necessity to be on it. Because both Robert and I don't really spend that much time on Twitter.
I don't spend any time on Twitter.
Account. I really only post my articles. And I don't on Facebook. That I don't understand why the MPs in the end actually just try and stay off it more. And they can't stop themselves. They don't need to engage as much as some of them do, I think. And
I agree.
That's my only worry. And they all will say, but we need to talk to our constituents. But a lot of the constituents aren't on Twitter.
I honestly can't see what I'm missing. I mean, I've thought about it quite a lot, and I honestly cannot see what I'm missing by not being on any of these Instagram, Facebook, anything. I mean, I guess if you're 22, it's different. You think you need that for your social life, your professional life, your romantic life. But I'm not missing, I don't feel I'm missing anything.
Yeah.
But I think I think we should get sidetracked by MPs, because I think this is as much about, or just, this is just sort of most of this stalking thing is just ordinary young people, young women who are being terrorised by kind of the worst form of toxic masculinity. Yeah. And, I mean, that thing about with that you mentioned about when they start talking about your kids and sending memorial notices.
Yes.
Yeah. That's proper creepy. And there should be, for the police, there should be a sort of series of trigger points, shouldn't there? And once that sort of thing is coming in, then you'd have to take it very, very seriously indeed.
Just quantity, you'd have thought. I mean, that was the interesting thing of being Baby Wayne did, where he goes and he said, well, I've had 180 emails today. Yeah. And he's all, well, is there anything wrong with them? Is there any threats? Anything wrong?
Yeah, the sheer numbers.
There was one case with a woman who died who, they knew that this man had been bullying her. You know, he appeared in a work
call.
He kept bullying her. She was only 23. Yeah. He was slightly older. And then he stalked her back. She was working at a stables. And he'd actually even left a plastic bag with lots of things like hammers and, saws, all sorts of things that, were traced back to him. Mm. So the police could have worked out that he was going to be dangerous. And yet they didn't put the two and two together.
There was the one a few years ago. The woman working in the beauty section of John Lewis, I think, or something. Do you remember that with her ex?
Yeah,
or the perfume section or something. And the boyfriend came, the ex-boyfriend came to the. I mean, the whole thing was completely predictable.
Robert, you've written about cycling, adding it to your list of things you don't like.
That's not entirely true. I love cycling, and I've been a a big propagandist over the course of my career for cycling. I remember in 1995, it was such a... I wrote a huge piece for Weekend Times about how I cycled to work, given because in those days it was like coming to work by canoe or... That's how unusual it was. So I feel like as I'm doing this as a kind of friendly critic, which this is in the wake of the guy who killed an 81-year-old pensioner in Regent's Park by knocking her over because him and his cycling club were essentially using Regent's Park as a racetrack. And I said, I was saying that there is a kind of epidemic of poor behaviour where cyclists... In the past, when I was cycling 30 years ago, if you went on the pavement, and I don't deny that occasionally I might have just, you know, scooted along the pavement, you did so at a very low speed with a sort of rueful, shamefaced apology to people, and you acknowledge that the pedestrian still had the right of way, and that's changed. That doesn't happen anymore. You get perfectly respectable looking people.
Your issue is cyclists who don't behave properly.
Yes.
Well, let's bring in Mike Van Erp, otherwise known as Cycling Mikey, who's built up a massive fan base on YouTube for hunting down bad drivers. Hello, Mike.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Good to have you with us. So what do you go around with a GoPro camera capturing drivers up to no good?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're all the same human beings, right? And I get as annoyed by bad cycling behavior as anybody else. But yeah, it's any road death is awful, and we should do what we can to stop and minimize those from happening. But the reality is, if you were to take a magic wand and wave it and make all cyclists instantly perfect, our roughly 1,800 deaths a year would be maybe almost immeasurably dropped. Whereas if you did the same for drivers, almost all of those deaths and injuries would be eliminated. So, I mean, I don't deny that there's bad cyclists, but I think we're just the same human beings that everybody else is. There's a few very bad cyclists. The most of us are just average people.
Are cyclists getting worse, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think, sorry to say this, Robert, but I feel your article was probably slightly cynical clickbait.
Surely not. I've seen the clicks. It definitely wasn't.
No, it definitely wasn't. I'm barely even aware of what a click is. I mean, I know it wasn't. No, I mean, that's. Yeah. I reject that.
You were fully dressed as well, weren't you?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I would say, from my point of view, being from the Netherlands, and, you know, it's such a collection of stereotypes that if you genuinely meant it, it really is a vomitus of stereotypes. A Dutch person would be saying, like, do normal, in other words, be more normal.
I don't think I invoked any stereotypes at all. I think that's just a sort of pathetic response, to be honest.
Well,
I mean, I was quite sober about it. I wasn't stereotyping. But I think my point was that, in the past, it might have been stereotypes that were mounting the pavement and running red lights, but now it's the danger is that the culture has changed, that perfectly otherwise respectable-looking people don't seem to be aware that you're not supposed to cycle on the pavement. They just view it as an alternative
to the
road.
I think
as
a walker and a runner, I definitely feel that it's actually the cyclists rather than the cars that are causing the problems.
I feel like we've opened a can of worms here. We're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid.
Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton, of course, you can read them both in The Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription at thetimes.co.uk, and with your subscription, you'll get a bonus episode of the podcast on a Saturday. Right, up next is PMQ's Unpacked.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Patrick Maguire.
And Patrick Maguire's here for PMQ's Unpacked. Nice to see you, Patrick.
It's really lovely to see you as well, Matt.
And I was thinking, you know, after all the hullabaloo of last week and the local elections, maybe this week we'd be slightly quieter. But some breaking news. The Tory MP, Natalie Elphick, has defected to the Labour Party, hitting out at what she called the broken promises of Rishi Sunak's tired and chaotic government. Patrick, what can you tell us?
I can tell you that my flabber is absolutely gusted, Matt. Obviously, Natalie Elphick has been the Conservative MP for Dover since 2019. Her ex-husband, of course, is Charlie Elphick, the convicted sex offender who used to sit for that seat. She's probably one of the last people you would expect to have defected to the Labour Party, not least because she has been at the forefront of the Tory efforts to have tougher measures on migration. But that, for Keir Starmer, who I believe is going to be asking questions about the Rwanda scheme and migration today anyway, is a significant boost, a significant vote of confidence in his party. And you see from what Natalie Elphick says in her statement, talking about Rishi Sunak's tired administration, this only reinforces the idea that there's one result of the next general election, and it's not the one Rishi Sunak keeps telling us that it's still in play.
I'm just having a look actually at her seat and how close it is.
Well, it was held by Labour until 2010. Labour now control the council. It was one of the bright spots in the 2021 local elections, which were otherwise awful for the Labour Party.
And in the she's got a majority of 12,000, but like you said,
That's chump change now.
Yeah. Exactly. We've seen that double that overturned.
Well, Dover is exactly the sort of seat Keir Starmer is outperforming in. You know, it's a Leave seat. It's in deep England, as you might call it. These are the seats that Keir Starmer's electoral coalition is now made up of. And it's, you know, if Natalie Elphick wants to stay in Parliament, which clearly she does, it's not surprising that she's chosen to change her allegiance to the Labour Party.
I mean, are her politics that close to Keir Starmer? She's in this statement talking about how the Conservatives once occupied the centre ground of British politics, but things have changed. The elected Prime Minister ousted in a coup led by the unelected Rishi Sunak. So, but I mean, her politics, I'd have put her more on the right of the party. I mean, partly because of where she is, MP. Well,
exactly.
Dover, but her position on sort of small boats, illegal migration. Am I reading that wrong?
Well, it's interesting. You could say that is a function of geography, that she is perceived as being on the right of the Conservative Party because the local politics of Dover necessitate her adopting that sort of position. You know, I don't think you can get re-elected or hope for re-election as a Conservative in Dover talking about open borders, given the demographics of that seat. But it's interesting. There's a lot about housing in her statement about defecting to the Labour Party. And people with long memories may remember in 2013 she conducted a review of housing finance for the coalition government. So she may say, I'm sure she will say when she's interviewed in this, look, I'm a expert in the housing sector. Planning is at the forefront of the Labour Party's policy offer, and I really want to use my professional expertise, given her career in Parliament has been pretty dramatic, given what's happened to her ex-husband and the circumstances in her seat. She may want to say, look, I'm a serious corporate lawyer who has expertise in this area, and I want to contribute to our incoming government.
So if you are just tuning in, the breaking news just ahead of PMQs: the Labour MP, Natalie Elphick, the MP for Dover and Deal, has defected to the Conservative Party, accusing Rishi Sunak of being behind the coup to oust Boris Johnson. Under Rishi Sunak, the Conservatives have become a byword for incompetence and division. The centre ground has been abandoned and key pledges of the 2019 manifesto ditched.
Can I just say, though, it's worth, you know, let's not define Natalie Elphick by her surname, but you know, she was suspended from the Commons for a day in 2021 for trying to influence the judge, along with several other Conservative MPs in her then husband's sentencing. So it'd be interesting. You know, Keir Starmer has a very trenchant and, you know, persistent critique of the morals of the Conservative Party. It'd be interesting to see how he talks about this when he's asked about it, which he inevitably will be.
Well, here we go then. It's a pretty dramatic start to PMQs. Last week, Rishi Sunak got quite a big laugh by taking the mickey out of Dan Poulter, who defected to the Conservatives, from the Conservatives to Labour, saying it made a nice change to see him in the Commons. How will he deal with this shock defection right before PMQs? Let's go live to the House of Commons now. Question one from Keir Starmer.
Mr Speaker, can I warmly welcome the new member for Blackpool South? Yeah. After the representation that fine town has had recently, it's good to know they've got a proper champion back at last. Yeah. Can I also warmly welcome the new Labour MP for Dover to these benches?
That's the Elphick, who was just discussing.
Mr Speaker, if one week a Tory MP who's also a doctor says the Prime Minister can't be trusted with the NHS and joins Labour, and the next week the Tory MP for Dover, on the front line of the small boats crisis, says the Prime Minister cannot be trusted with our borders and joins Labour, what is the point of this failed government staggering on?
Well, Mr Speaker, can I actually join him in welcoming his newest MP for Blackpool? I must say he looks a lot happier than the member who was sitting there last week. But let me also...
That's right. Chris Webb is the new MP. I think he was referred to Dan Poulter, didn't look very happy last week.
Let me join with him in congratulating all new and paying tribute to all former councillors, PCCs and mayors across the country. I hope his new ones do him as proud as I am of all of mine, Mr Speaker. Great leaders like Andy Street, who leave behind a strong legacy of more homes, more jobs and more investment, in sharp contrast to the legacy left by the last Labour government, which was a letter joking that there was no money left.
Well, there we are. Rishi Sunak sounds a bit croaky.
He's been
screaming moments before. What's happened now?
Oliver Dowden, I mean, he's not a man given to Cheshire cat grins, but he looks absolutely... He looks like he's, you know, just served 8 years in NAM.
It's notable that when Keir Starmer pointed to Natalie Elphick on the benches behind him, several Tory MPs looked quite baffled. They hadn't noticed that one of their own had defected.
Well, and she would probably be the last person they expected to. I, you know, I've got getting a lot of texts from Labour people right now. One of them just reads, well, well. You know, a lot of smugness on the Labour benches right now, as you would expect. It's difficult to pay that much attention to these exchanges. Rishi Sunak trying to put a brave face on the ejection of Andy Street there, when the most incongruous defection in living memory has just happened and is playing out behind Keir Starmer.
Well, let's go back. I mean, you know, he asked, what's the point of this government? But then Rishi said, I just completely ignored that and paid tribute to Andy Street.
Andy Street, who was, you know, who ran Labour so close in the West Midlands precisely because he defined himself against the government.
There we are. Let's go back to the House of Commons and this extraordinary episode of PMQs Unpacked. On the day a second Labour MP in his many weeks Conservative MP defects to the Labour Party. Natalie Elphick sitting behind Keir Starmer. This is question two for Keir Starmer.
Well, Mr Speaker, in addition to losing two Tory MPs in 2 weeks, the Prime Minister's been on the receiving end of some of the biggest by-election swings in history. He's also lost 1,500 Tory councillors, half of his party's mayors, and a leadership election to a lettuce. How many more times do the public and his own MPs need to reject him before he takes the hint?
Well, Mr Speaker, this time last year I reminded him of some advice, actually, from his own mentor, Tony Blair, who had said at the time that he can be as cocky as he likes about local elections, but come a general election, it's policy that counts, Mr Speaker. Now, One year on from that advice, what has he managed? £28 billion of tax rises, 70 new business regulations, 30 U-turns, and a deputy leader under a police investigation.
I mean, he's doing his best in a slightly tricky situation. Keir Starmer, I mean, he is... It's so interesting, Keir Starmer. When he's, you know, up against it, he's hopeless. When he's got the wind in his sails like this, I mean, he is bordering on cocky. How many times does he need to be rejected by his own MPs and the public before he takes the hint?
Well, it's, you know, everybody who knows Keir Starmer, well, everyone who works with Keir Starmer says he's a confidence player, which bears out the analysis you just offered. And he is at the top of his game today. And the Labour Party is shifting, and this is quite dangerous for Rishi Sunak, is shifting a position where they're just openly mocking the Conservative Party. That is the theme we're already seeing in this session of PMQs. We're also seeing it in what the stuff the Labour Party are now putting out. You know, it's sort of attack, but derisive attack, you know, and that's the most dangerous thing for Rishi Sunak, is that not only have the public stopped listening to him, and they do listen to him, they think he's a bit of a joke.
We should point out this quote, and there's a couple, Rishi Sunak's used this a couple of times now, aimed at Keir Starmer, saying he can be as cocky as he likes about the local elections, but come a general election, policy counts. So that Tony Blair did say that, but not about Keir Starmer, which is what that impression gives. He said it in 2007 to David Cameron, when David Cameron was cock-a-hoop about some local election results. And so Tony Blair at PMQ said to David Cameron, he can be as cocky as he likes about the local elections, come a general election, policy counts, on policy we win and he loses. But anyway, it's just an interesting, quite why they've reached so far back.
But it's interesting that he followed that up not with an exposition of all the great policy he's trying to push through Parliament in what remains of this session, but with a partisan attack on the Labour Party and Angela Rayner and all of that sort of thing. You know, and this gets to the heart of what you hear from Tory MPs, which is, you know, even if we're going long and the general election is going to be in autumn or winter, or even in, you know, the first month of 2025, what are we using this time for? It reminds me of what Paul Scully was saying on your exit interview the other day. You know, what are we doing with parliamentary time? The answer is not very much.
Actually, if you look at some of the quotes from David Cameron in 2007, challenging Tony Blair, he said, "I don't know why members of the cabinet are shouting. The Chancellor's spin doctors are wandering around the lobby handing out all their jobs. This is the government of the living dead. Why do we have to put up with even more paralysis?" So, you know, what goes around comes around and all that. Let's go back to the House of Commons then. Question number three from Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer. Well, I'm surprised he brought up a police investigation. I think his record is played one, no, actually two, the seatbelt as well. Played two, lost two in relation to police investigation. But it's the same. The public keeps telling him, the voters tell him it's not good enough. Instead of listening, he keeps telling him everything's fine, if only they realise his greatness. He just doesn't get it. But at least after Thursday night, Mr. Speaker, he can go to the many places that he calls home and enjoy the fruits of his success. In Southampton or Downing Street, he's got great Labour councils. Yay! At his mansion in Richmond, he can enjoy a brand new Labour mayor of North Yorkshire. Yay! And at his pad in Kensington, he can celebrate a historic third term for the mayor of London. Yay! Now that he too can enjoy the benefits of this changed Labour Party, is he really still in such a hurry to get back to California?
Mr. Speaker, I must say I was of course surprised to see the honourable gentleman in North Yorkshire, but probably not as surprised as he was when he realised he couldn't take the tube there, Mr. Speaker. But I can tell him that the people of North Yorkshire believe in hard work, secure borders, lower taxes, and straight talking common sense, Mr. Speaker. They're not going to get any of that from a virtue signalling lawyer from North London.
Oh dear, it's like they forgot to prep for this, and so he's just grabbed like some old notes.
You know, that's his all purpose attack line on Keir Starmer.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you listen to Tory MPs over the weekend, what's consistent in all of their lines is, well, there's no great love out there for Keir Starmer. You know, which reminds me that the cover of Private Eye this week nails that very well. Passengers on the Titanic saying there's no great love for the iceberg, which is a very good joke. But you know, you're seeing here that the only levers Rishi Sunak has left to pull in the election campaign, which is and I feel ridiculous even saying this, which is try and emphasise the personal contest between the two, because, you know, you look at his personal ratings, they're not great, Keir Starmer, but ultimately people dislike the Conservative Party more than anything else.
It's a relativity game, this. I thought it was slightly bold of Keir Starmer taking the mic and saying you can go to the many places he calls home, while Angela Rayner's sitting next to him, and she simply can't seem to remember where she lives. But she was sort of laughing along, enjoying it. If Oliver Dowden looked downbeat at the beginning, I think it's fair to say he's taken a turn for the worse.
Oliver Dowden, I think, among the people in Downing Street who think the Prime Minister would have been best served calling the election for last month. And there are lots of people in Downing Street who've come to that view.
Just get it over with.
Just look, it's only getting worse. Let's get it over with. And, you know, for the first PMQs after that slated general election date to involve Natalie Elphick defecting, I think is testament to the wisdom of that case, maybe.
Well, here we are then. So Natalie Elphick, Conservative MP for Dover and Deal, has defected to the Labour Party. He's sitting behind Keir Starmer, who seems, I think it's fair to say,
cock-a-hoop.
Let's go back to the House of Commons now. Question four from Keir Starmer.
It was great to be in North Allerton, where they'd just voted to reject the Prime Minister's proposition. Mr. Speaker, he's finally found something in common with the British public. No matter where he calls home, all his neighbours are backing this changed Labour Party. And they keep rejecting him because they have sussed him out. They know there's nothing behind the boasts, the gimmicks, the smug smile. He's a dodgy salesman, desperate to sell them a dud. Now, Mr. Speaker, 16 days ago, when he held a press conference claiming victory on Rwanda, he said the next few weeks will be about action. People want deeds, not words. So let's test that. How many small boat crossings have there been since he said that 16 days ago?
Mr. Speaker, actually, just before we go on to that, he talked about a changed Labour Party. That's important, because he talked about a changed Labour Party. He talks about it a lot. But just this morning, and he also talked about his new mayor in London. So just this morning, we've learned that the Labour mayor in London believes, and I quote, that there is an equivalence between the brutal terrorist attack of Hamas and Israel defending itself. And let me be crystal clear. There is absolutely no equivalence between a terrorist group and a democratic state. So can I ask him now, will he take this opportunity to demonstrate that Labour Party has changed? And will he condemn those comments from the Labour mayor?
So he didn't come to the question of small boats, which he said he was going to come to in a minute. Interestingly, Keir Starmer trying to sort of steer the conversation back onto an actual policy, which he knows causes endless problems for Rishi Sunak and his own MPs.
Yes, but the flip side of that is they're exchanging partisan jibes about the local elections, and that was bad for Rishi Sunak too, and has caused no amount of anxiety, you know, not least the fact that Rishi Sunak now has a Labour mayor in North Yorkshire, which is... not what anybody expected. And it's quite rum for the Prime Minister to raise Sadiq Khan, given that, you know, some Tories spent last week very excitedly briefing that Susan Hall was going to win and that Sadiq Khan was really unpopular and you know, he was right for the taking. You know, even in attacking Sadiq Khan, he draws attention to, you know, their own pretty shoddy handling of the local election ceremony.
Well, the reaction to Natalie Elphick's defection is already rolling in before PMQs has even finished. Andrea Jenkins, a long-standing critic of Rishi Sunak's call for him to go. She's just tweeted at Natalie Elphick, "You were a centre-right Conservative. Labour want to give asylum to 50,000-plus people. I thought you had more conviction than to join the lefty Labour lot you despised so much." And is attached a news story with the headline, "Don't trust Labour on immigration, they really want open borders," warns Natalie Elphick.
You know, it's always the occupational hazard of being a defector, isn't it? That you will have, especially in a place like Dover, you will have criticised your opponents in quite trenchant terms. Let me read you a message Let me read you a message from a senior Labour MP who describes this as all strategy and no substance and not even good strategy. Peeling off One Nation Tories makes sense and speaks to a moderate, sensible Labour Party. And Natalie Elphick is very much not that. I'm sensing some discomfort in bits of the Labour Party about Natalie Elphick, given the sort of Conservative MP she is, given the biographical complications we were talking about earlier. But I imagine the calculation of the people at the top of the Labour Party was the propaganda fillip we get from this, particularly if she's not standing at the next general election anyway, beats a couple of days of awkward questions on this stuff.
And actually, you know, they had one last week, they have one this week, they have one next week. Everyone forgets who the individuals were, and it just becomes this idea of
just generally, you know, yeah, another Tory MP has defected. And, you know, it's a great fillip for Mike Tapp, who is the former Royal Marine standing for Labour in Dover. And, you know, to say, look, we've got a Labour council and people are so... even the Tories know that we're the best choice for this very evocative and troubled bit of England, given that she's defected as well.
Well, let's go see if it gets any better. Let's go back to... Will Rishi Sunak's voice make it to the end? Let's go back to question five from Keir Starmer.
Well, I know that was the last run out before the general election, but he's getting ahead of himself in asking me questions.
Well, Rachel Reeves enjoyed that.
Mr. Speaker, I notice he didn't even attempt to answer the question. He knows the answer. Since he claimed victory 16 days ago, there have been a staggering 2,400 small boat crossings. 2,400. That's a gimmick, not a deterrent. And those 2,400 will be added to the Tories asylum perma backlog, which is forecast to rise to 100,000 by the end of this year. Now, the Prime Minister pretends he will remove them all to Rwanda, but Rwanda can only take a few hundred a year. Yeah. At that rate, the Prime Minister's grand plan would take over 300 years to remove them all. Mr. Speaker, that's tens of thousands of people with their claims going unprocessed, who are going to be here for their entire lifetime, living in hotels at the taxpayers' expense. It is absurd to call that anything other than an amnesty handed to them by the Tory party, isn't it?
Well, Mr. Speaker, he had the opportunity to condemn the comments of his mayor, a mayor who said that there is an equivalence between Hamas and Israel. He did not do that, and everyone will see what that is. That is the change Labour Party, Mr. Speaker, right there. Since I became Prime Minister, small boat crossings are down by a third. That's because we've doubled MCA funding, increased enforcement rates, closed bank accounts, deported 24,000 people, processed more claims, and, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to border control, there is a crucial difference between us. We want secure borders. He's happy with open borders.
Now, on the substance of this, is PMQ's Matt Chorley and Patrick McGuire. On the substance of this, Rishi Sunak's just wrong now, isn't he? There was a point where the number of boats crossing was down by a third.
And that's very much not the case now.
But that's not the case now. You can't keep saying what was the case in November when the number that have crossed so far this year is the highest it's ever been.
Mm. Well, that's the problem. That's the problem for Rishi Sunak. I'm sure he might be corrected in due course. And it's clear that, you know, despite what's happening in Ireland, it's not immediately clear that Rwanda has had any deterrent effect. Even the prospect of the Rwanda scheme beginning in due course had any deterrent effect on numbers, which as you say, are not going down. And, you know, look at the weather here in the southeast of England today. I imagine it's, you know, we're entering a period where they're only going to go up and up and up, which is another risk of going long for Rishi Sunak.
I meant to mention this before, but in the last question, Keir Starmer described the Prime Minister as a dodgy salesman. Desperate to sell them a dud, which is obviously lots of alliteration. But Dennis Skinner got kicked out of the Commons for calling the Prime Minister Dodgy Dave. I thought dodgy was
unparliamentary,
a bit dodgy in Parliament.
It's very interesting. Maybe it's the metaphor or the using it as an analogy. He's like a dodgy salesman, not the same as calling him dodgy Rishi. Rishi. I don't know though. Incidentally, Lindsay Hall's been very quiet today.
Yeah.
Not like him.
Maybe he's defected.
Defecting back to the Labour Party.
it's pretty extraordinary, this. Rishi Sunak, battling on. battling on his way through PMQs. Natalie Elphick, I suppose the other smart thing about announcing Natalie Elphick's defection at this point is that rather doing it the weekend, which is what they did with Dan Poulton, they could get their lines ready and the things he'd said previously about the Labour Party. They're completely wrong-footed. And he doesn't have an opportunity to say, only last week she was saying the Labour Party were bad for this or that or whatever.
Yeah, similar to the Christian Wakeford defection in January 2021, which was also pulled off at PMQs. It's interesting that Dan Poulter didn't do the same. Maybe he had a clinic booked, which is the Tory critique of Dan Poulter.
Because he's a doctor, not because of any personal...
Yeah, sorry, Dan Poulter, Dr. Dan Poulter, doing vital work in our NHS or indeed as a private locum somewhere, who knows. But, you know, it is interesting, this Natalie Elphick thing, because also what the fact that it's happening during PMQs means there's no, as you say, no opportunity to ask awkward questions. And with Natalie Elphick, there are a lot of awkward questions, both about her policy stances and her personal conduct, particularly relating to her then-husband, Charlie Elphick, who was convicted for sexual assault. Natalie Elphick said the court was on a bit of a mission and criticised the sentence he received, which is an interesting question for Keir Starmer, Mr. Rules, as Lisa Nandy famously called him way back when, and someone who cares deeply about the criminal justice system and its integrity to be facing, which I'm sure he will in due course.
Well, we go back to the House of Commons then for the last exchange between Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer. This is question number six from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, the whole country knows that removing less than 1% of asylum seekers isn't stopping the boats, it's granting an amnesty, a Tory amnesty. But if he thinks the voters are wrong, if he thinks his own MPs joining the Labour Party are wrong, if he thinks anyone believes any of the nonsense that he spouts, why doesn't he put it to the test and call a general election?
Mr. Speaker, he talks about removing people. This is a person who campaigned, to stop the deportation of foreign national offenders, Mr. Speaker. It shows how out of touch his values are with the British people. But, Mr. Speaker, it's yet another week where we hear nothing about his plan to do anything on the issues that matter to the country. Meanwhile, we're getting on, reforming welfare and getting people into work. He opposes it. We're controlling migration, legal and illegal. He opposes it. And as we heard, Mr. Speaker, we are boosting defence spending to strengthen our country. He opposes it, and that's the difference. He snipes from the sidelines. The Conservatives are building a brighter future.
Oh, I'm not sure if he faded out the cheering then, or there wasn't very much of it. On the glumometer, Oliver Dowden
is on the phone to Samaritans, I think.
It's hard to say close to tears, but he doesn't look very cheerful, Oliver Dowden, the Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, there's precious little for the Tories to smile about here. I mean, what's the glint of light amid all this darkness for the Conservatives?
Yeah. If you've got any ideas,
what about those exchanges?
If you were looking for a silver lining and all that, what would you take from WhatsApp is 0333 003 2353.
Because it's not as if Rishi Sunak going hard on migration, and look, notwithstanding the fact that voters aren't really tuning in, local elections are low turnout, maybe some of these people will think twice if they hear this from the Conservative Party during a general election campaign. But nothing about this attack on Labour on immigration suggests it's harming Labour's standing among the voters it's aimed at, i.e. middle-aged men who voted Leave. Indeed, Labour is doing better among them than ever before, and second to them among that demographic are Reform. So the more Rishi Sunak bangs on about this, the more you can't help but feel actually it's probably going to hurt him more in the long run.
Yeah, raising it up the agenda. Paul's been in touch. Paul in Faversham. Says about Natalie Elphick, I'm totally shocked. I used to live in the Dover constituency and my mum was living there until recently. I thought a defection to Reform was far more likely. Somebody else says, please, gentlemen, give the most hard-working Prime Minister a little hearing. I want to have a route around in the archive just a moment, because back in 2021, Natalie Elphick came on this programme. Being the MP for Dover, she clearly had views about the need to tackle the small boat crossings from France to England. And I asked her then for one example of what then Home Secretary Priti Patel had done to stop the small boat crossings.
Well, I think there are a number of things which she has done, and those
give me an example.
So the root and branch immigration forms that need primary legislation, we couldn't do those until we left the EU. As soon as we left the EU, those have been put in training, they're going through Parliament. And actually, they'd go through Parliament quicker if Labour didn't keep opposing every attempt to tighten up our border
controls. Oh, come on. You've got a majority. You've got an 80-seat majority. It is not the Labour Party's fault that you have not passed the legislation yet, is it?
Well, Matt, you're asking me, you know, why faster action is being taken. I'm saying that actually, you know, Labour are not at one mind at tackling this issue with the same seriousness.
A bit awkward, Patrick.
I mean, where to start?
I've forgotten actually how good that interview was. That when asked, you know, what's the government doing to stop the small boats? It was apparently all the Labour Party's fault.
And here she is, the Labour MP for Dover.
Yeah. Lara Spirit's here. How are you, Lara?
I'm well. How are you?
Very good, very good. Overall, how would you sum up the best of the West?
Not as exciting as the defection, obviously. And annoyingly, not really any discernible questions about that either. But there were some interesting moments. I think one of them, which is tangentially relevant, is this question that we'll go to first from Sir Edward Lee, who is, of course, very hawkish on migration of the Tory party's right when it comes to this issue, who appeals with a curious note that only the lives that matter are children, which I wonder if he misspoke, but I don't know, perhaps not. And then secondly is this question about whether or not the government should be offshoring those who arrive here under current legislation illegally. And I think Rishi Sunak's response to this question is interesting.
When it comes to small boat crossings, there's a lot of talk of human rights. But surely the only human right and life that matters is the life of children who are being taken across the Channel. In this respect, will the government now do the only thing that will actually be a real deterrence, and that is to arrest and detain all those who land illegally on our shores and then offshore them promptly, so that once and for all we can save lives and end this cruel and callous trade?
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Speaker, my right honourable friend is right that these crossings are incredibly dangerous and they risk people's lives. Just weeks ago, a 7-year-old girl died attempting the crossing. And that's why, as a matter of basic compassion, we must do everything we can to break the cycle of the criminal gangs. And that's why, Mr. Speaker, you need a deterrent. That's what the National Crime Agency say. That's how we dealt with illegal migrants from Albania, because it's only by removing people who shouldn't be here that we remove the reason for them to come in the first place. And that is how we'll control our borders. And it's clear that it's only this party that not only has a plan to stop the boats, but has a plan to stop the tragic loss of life in the Channel 2.
Edward Lee, I suppose, trying to be helpful, but actually, the point that Patrick was making a minute ago, all this really does is put up in lights exactly the point that Keir Starmer was making, which the numbers just keep going up.
Yeah, and that there are significant Tory divisions to your interview that we just played with Natalie there, which are one of the reasons why those flagship Tory proposals have taken quite a long time, it's fair to say, to get off the ground. I think offshoring is particularly interesting because we know that Labour are considering it, although some close to Keir Starmer say he would actually never implement an offshoring scheme. But they are watching Italy's scheme with Albania closely and is something that could be on the cards for Labour. I think an interesting question that people around Keir Starmer might ask is, you know, why is it that Rishi Sunak doesn't actually ask Keir Starmer any particular questions on their specific policy on this? Because today I felt watching it, I don't know what you thought, but that it was slightly a missed opportunity from Rishi Sunak in that respect, after a week that we had last week where there were real questions facing Labour about the specifics of their policy. And actually it was quite clear to a lot of people that they had some of those questions to answer, but Sunak didn't really seem interested in his responses on migration and pressing those.
The Conservative fight back over Natalie Elphick is now well underway. Jonathan Gullis, one of the deputy chairs of the Tory party, has just tweeted, "I agree with Natalie. Labour are not serious about stopping the boats and will not stop the boats. Their migrant amnesty and deal with the EU surrendering our borders to Sir Keir's buddies in Brussels would only let the smugglers win and see more lives unnecessarily lost." It would seem that Natalie Elphick has not deleted any old tweets. They seem to be going back through.
She's a friend of transparency, Natalie Elphick. Well, this reminds you when I spent a very enjoyable day in January 2021 getting texts from, January 22, getting very enjoyable texts from Tory MPs have been in WhatsApp groups with Christian Wakeford, in which he insulted basically every one of his new colleagues. We've also got a statement from a Tory spokesperson who says the people of Dover and Deal will be disappointed having felt the impact of illegal migration. They did have an MP who sat with the party fighting to tackle this issue head on. Now they have an MP in a party that has worked to block our plans to tackle illegal immigration 139 times. We wish Natalie well, as she now has to support Labour's amnesty for illegal immigrants, and one that directly opposes her own views. It was only last year that she penned an article titled "Don't Trust Labour on Immigration. They Really Want Open Borders." So we can see what the Tory party are going to say about it. It's what people in the Labour Party are going to say about this defection that's interesting me, and I think will cause the Labour Party some trouble over the coming days. I've had several messages, including from front benchers, who are really uncomfortable with this, who think it's too clever by half, who think it's all tactics, no strategy. We'll see what happens, but, you know, these are awkward questions. But Rishi Sunak, bluntly, is facing an even more awkward question, which is, why are you about to lose the general election by a landslide? It's now so obvious that even Natalie Elphick, of all people, is joining the Labour Party.
Of the many old tweets which have been unearthed by the Tory party, this is a particularly good one. Natalie Elphick in June 2022. At PMQs today, a very muddled and confused performance by Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer. A strong reminder that all the opposition offer is a Lib-Lab SNP coalition of chaos that would take our country backwards on Brexit and break up the United Kingdom. Which is exactly the line that the Tories have been pushing this week, but obviously now not Natalie Elphick. She's sitting on the Labour benches. Somebody else also messaged in saying, Jonathan says, if there's an MP crossing the floor each week, please can you ask Patrick when Labour will have a majority? Does that mean we don't need an election?
Oh, that's very good, isn't it? I think the Tory majority is now down to the low 50s, isn't it?
It's 38 now.
38?
I hope that's correct, but I'm almost certain it is.
Working majority of 38.
So you need, what, 16 to go across?
18, 19.
Fives and twos and tens.
It's like doubles in dance, isn't it? Like, you know, when you miss a double, which I do very often.
Oh yeah. My God.
Everything, you've turned everything into darts. It's only a matter of time before Lara mentions Michael Foote. Where are we going now back in the House of Commons, Lara?
We are going to Stephen Flynn, who is asking Rishi Sunak about Rafa and his policy on arms exports, this question about where the UK stands in relation to Biden's slightly amended position on this question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I begin by also congratulating the fantastic John Swinney on becoming Scotland's first minister. Our opponents should be careful, very careful, what they wish for. Mr. Speaker, as we await the imminent Israeli incursion into Rafah, where 1.2 million people are sheltering, including 600,000 children, it has been reported that the United States has paused an arms shipment to Israel. The UK will now follow suit, won't it?
Well, Mr. Speaker, there are, the gentleman may not realise, but the UK government doesn't itself directly provide arms or ship arms to Israel. And when it comes to the situation in Rafah, I've been very clear that we are deeply concerned about a full military incursion of Rafah, given the devastating humanitarian impact. I've made that position and point specifically to Prime Minister Netanyahu whenever we've spoken, and will continue to urge all sides to focus on the negotiations at hand to bring about a pause in the conflict, to release hostages and get more aid in.
It's interesting that he goes on that issue. I suppose it's the one way that he doesn't get Rishi Sunak coming back and making snarky points about the trouble the SNP are in.
Yes, I mean,
ask
he has
a serious question, you'll get a serious answer.
Sure, I mean, we saw that from Sir Ed Davey today, who seems to be kind of more loathed on the Tory benches sometimes than even Keir Starmer. He stands up and people just kind of immediately very derisive, and then he begins with a kind of human interest story, which I think somewhat quietens those on the Tory benches. But Stephen Flynn has kind of long been interested in asking these questions on Gaza, so not massively surprising. And indeed, Rishi Sunak does go on to clarify that the legal advice that they've had on this question remains unchanged, but I think we will see questions about this as over the next couple of days.
What did Ed Davey ask about?
I can't quite remember. It was a, it was
it was a trap. 5 minutes
I'm
ago.
So sorry.
No one can remember. Are we not going to listen to it though? No.
Patrick, where do you think, give us an update of where you are. Your phone is red hot with people getting in touch about Natalie Elphick's defection.
I'm getting now, getting a former Tory special advisor saying they think this is a failure of vetting on the Labour Party's part, that it'll backfire on them. You would say that if you were to, well, I guess the crucial word there is former, so they're not necessarily inclined to be kind to their Tory colleagues, their erstwhile colleagues. Getting a lot of messages in that vein. But ultimately, let's put ourselves in the mind of one of Labour's so-called hero voters. Bluntly, they're probably not going to get into the weeds of Natalie Elphick's past. They'll just see Tory MP for Dover defects, as we're seeing on the televisions around us. You know, if you're sat in a Wetherspoons now,
if only.
Chance would be a fine thing. that's what you're seeing on the telly.
Yeah.
The difficulty is if tomorrow the people in Wetherspoons are seeing, you know, Labour leader defends defection of judge interference.
Yeah.
Husband, bad MP.
But, I mean, in fact, Gabriel Pogrant, our colleague from the Sunday Times, has just been tweeting, saying that Natalie Elphick has just been welcomed to the Labour Party by Keir Starmer, cruelly and publicly tormented the victims of her sex offender ex-husband, Charlie. She claimed after his conviction that he'd merely been punished for being attractive and attracted to women. She also pressed a judge in an improper attempt to influence his child, which is what the reason she was suspended from the comments for the day, and she was gifted a seat behind closed doors and has never apologised. I suppose the problem for the Conservative is, if you start saying, well, she's absolutely dreadful, she shouldn't be an MP, it's like, well, sorry, you've been sitting with her until Monday morning.
Yeah, exactly. You facilitated this sort of very unseemly fix after the charge and subsequent conviction of Charlie Elphick. You know, you were quite comfortable sitting. I don't think they're going to attack her on those grounds, because no one necessarily wants to turn that rock over in the Conservative Party and see what's underneath it. The difficulty for Natalie Elphick in terms of Tory attacks is just how volubly she has called for the most draconian border measures possible. And as Laura wrote in the Times the other week, we don't really know what Labour's border policy is beyond wanting it to sound tough. And Natalie Elphick joining helps it sound tough, but I think there's still big questions over what that policy is.
We've also had a rummage in the archive to find when Rachel Reeves appeared on Matt Ford's podcast. They were discussing the fact that Natalie Elphick, her new colleague on the Labour benches, had criticised Marcus Rashford for missing a penalty in the Euros final. So let's take a listen to Rachel Reeves' take on her new colleague, Natalie Elphick.
Oh, what was that the MP for Dover, Natalie Elphick, when Rashford missed a penalty, her tweet was, if we spent more time on football rather than trying to get free school meals for our kids, maybe it'd be better.
Right, potty mouth Rachel Reeves there on the Political Party podcast.
Not sure I'm comfortable with, you know, aspirants to our great offices of state swearing so freely in public. It's a bit coarse, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, but they get overexcited, don't they, when we go on a podcast.
That's what they're like down in Bromley, though.
You see what's happened on podcasts. You know, Peter Mandelson comes on our podcast and...
He's never sworn, though, Peter Mandelson.
No, that's true. He's just fat shamed.
Yeah, God, yeah. I'm glad... Heaven forfend the day I'm on a podcast with Peter Mandelson. God.
But it just goes to show that politics is a funny old business. And when this has literally taken 45 minutes for us to go from Natalie Elphick's defection to all of the things that she said criticising the Labour Party that Labour people have said criticising her. What will happen? Has she said she's standing down?
She's not standing at the next election.
She has said that.
Yeah, I don't know if she necessarily said that, but it's been reported.
Maybe
so
she's
I think
been
we
told
can understand that. But I mean, the candidate in Dover, Mike Tapp, I think his name is someone who senior Labour figures are very excited about. And when you say who are the potential parliamentary entries in the next after the next election, they will often say Mike Tapp.
Former Royal Marine, big strapping lad, Mike Tapp.
That's definitely going to appear on a leaflet now. Big strapping lad, Times Radio.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there we are. That rounds off PMQ's Unpacked. A lot of excitement. A lot of excitement, apart from when Lama came in. But anyway, I'm joking. What time will you be in people's inboxes?
3 p.m.
Half past three, you'll be in... you already read Lara's email. Times subscribers, go to times.co.uk/redbox. Patrick's off to a Wetherspoons now to take the temperature of the nation.
Chance will be a fine thing. No, I won't tell people my favourite pub round here, because it's a well-kept secret between me and several members of Labour Party staff.
Right, very good. There we go.
Lovely stuff. Patrick McGuire and Lara Spirit there with PMQ's Unpacked. If you want to get in touch, let us know what you think. Email me matt@times.radio. But for now, for me, Matt Chorley, goodbye.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.